high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's 24 time zones, and welcome to the strangest show on radio, and I think the best. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Great to be here. Let us first look at the world news, such as it is. It's usually not very good. After yet another stern warning from our president, and under increasing world pressure indeed, Israel began to withdraw early Tuesday from two of the West Bank cities it occupied. Tanks were rumbling out of two towns as troops left buildings and schools after about a week's occupation, but it is not over. Frustrated U.N. Security Council members grilled the Israeli ambassador today on why Israel has defied repeated demands for an end to increasingly deadly attacks on Palestinian cities. Members also reissued demands for the Israelis to immediately get out of the West Bank. Israel's U.N. ambassador told the council that a ceasefire must proceed or accompany a military pullout. So they want the shooting and the bombing and the the guys who are blowing themselves up to stop. The Cleveland Catholic Diocese suspended nine priests today while prosecutors review past allegations they sexually abused children. Now, oil prices surged Monday. This is one you better pay attention to. Oil prices surged Monday in a fresh wave of anxiety after Iraq cut off crude exports to demonstrate support for the Palestinians in their struggle with Israel. So, that's a big deal. Iraq cuts exports of oil, and that's going. And then, at the same time, Venezuela, a labor strike there, has squeezed that country's oil shipments to a trickle. Crude prices, the futures closed at $27.02. That's up $1.03 from Friday's close. Now, there are two rumors, and I want to be careful to put them under the category of rumors that are floating around wildly on the internet and elsewhere right now. But they are rumors. One is that gas prices will shortly rise to $3 per gallon. That certainly would have a blindingly awful effect on the economy should that occur. And the other is that because of some changing banking moves in Japan, gold may be about to make a big, sudden move. Gold may be about to cost more. It's been, the price of gold has been sort of, according to what a lot of people believe, artificially held low. But it may be about to get let loose. So those are two rumors that I've heard. And I want to be careful to say again, they are only rumors. What I read you, though, about Iraq and Venezuela, not rumors. And the price of crude up, not a rumor there either. Now, other news. Once again, a small town in Massachusetts, Billerica, is the next to deal with this mysterious rash, similar to the ones that have broken out elsewhere. In fact, also Dennis, Massachusetts, Cape Cod last week. According to one woman whose son developed the rash, they need to find out what's going on. School officials said the rash was confined to a Locke Middle School in that city, town rather, where 40 to 50 kids have contracted it. Now, this echoes, all around the nation. You almost have to wonder, with this many reports, even as suppressed generally as the news has been, and the news appears locally and regionally and not very much nationally, you've got to want, they're jumping on this. I mean, you just know the CDC and everybody else who could investigate the reason for this would be all over it, and yet we still don't have an answer, do we? It is always headlined as a mysterious rash. Remember, I broke the news last week about the first cloned baby. Well, it figures. The world's first cloned human embryo is the son of a rich Arab, according to claims made by Dr. Savino Antonori, the Italian fertility specialist. That doctor said the embryo was a clone of a VIP, and that he had been experimenting to produce human clones in an Islamic country. the doctor who pledged with Zavos of the Institute of America in Lexington, Kentucky, to attempt to clone a baby by the end of 2001 caused outrage last week when he told a scientific meeting at the United Arab Emirates that a woman patient was, in fact, 8 weeks pregnant with a clone. So, folks, there it is, the first clone. And who did it go to? We've had a lot of talks on this program about cloning. And the one thing I've told you is that the ego of people with immense amounts of money would probably be the first to clone. And who do we get here? A rich Arab cloning himself. I told you that money and egos would be no barrier to the ethical, moral questions about cloning, that people would want little copies of themselves, exact duplicates of themselves, and here is the first. The woman is now 8 weeks pregnant. Big, big flap in Munich, Germany. Strange lights in the sky, baffled Bavarians late on Saturday over the weekend as hundreds of panicked callers jammed police lines, seeking an explanation for the phenomena. Reports of an unsettling late-night natural light show came from all over the southern German state as well as neighboring regions. It had nothing to do with the weather, according to one meteorologist. I don't think green men from Mars have landed in Bavaria. It was like a huge firework. You could even see it through half-closed blinds. The whole affair lasted only about 3 seconds. Oh, I wonder what happened in Germany. Could have been a meteor. You know, they threw that in here at the bottom of the article. They always do. Could have been a meteor. Well, could have been. Last fall, FBI profilers announced, you may recall, the person who sent deadly anthrax-laced letters to news organizations in Capitol Hill was probably a grudge-bearing sociopath, male laboratory nerd with the knowledge of the geography of Trenton, New Jersey. But apparently a new scientific analysis sent to top government officials is suggesting the anthrax attacker may be a scientific whiz so smart that he succeeded in making a weaponized form of the bacterium more sophisticated than any previously known. Government sources are telling Newsweek magazine that the secret new analysis shows anthrax found in a letter addressed to Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy was ground to a microscopic fineness never achieved by any U.S. biological weapons experts. The Leahy anthrax, mailed in an envelope that was recovered unopened from a Washington Post office last November, also was coated with a chemical compound unknown to experts who have worked in the field for years. Coating matches no known anthrax samples ever recovered from biological weapons producers anywhere in the world, including Iraq and the former Soviet Union. Wow. The combination of the intense milling of the bacteria and the unusual coating produced an anthrax powder so fine and fluffy that individually coated anthrax spores were found in the Leahy envelope, something that U.S. bioweapons experts had never seen. Pretty interesting, huh? Sort of a private little word. Robert Mallett, a physicist at the University of Connecticut, believes that he knows how to build a time machine, an actual device, according to Dr. Mallett, that could send something or someone from the future to the past or vice versa. And he's not joking. Unlike other physicists who have pondered the science of time travel, the 57-year-old professor has devised a machine that he believes could transport anything from an atom to a person from one time to another. And if any of you need this story, and I know you will, it comes from Boston.com. That's Boston.com. This is a Globe staff article. It's not about a time machine. He says, quote, "I'm not a nut. I hope to have a working mock-up and start experiments this fall, says Mallett, who will detail his ideas about time travel at the Boston Museum of Science. Quote, I would think I was a crackpot, too, if there weren't other colleagues I knew who were working on it. This isn't Ron Mallett's theory of matter. It's Einstein's theory of relativity. I'm not pulling things out of the known laws of physics, but Alan Guth, a physics professor at MIT who studied the theory of time machines, says he isn't sure it's even theoretically possible to travel through time. As far as whether time travel is a possibility, says he, definitely not within our lifetimes. Well, what does he know? Here we've got Dr. Ronald Mallett, who says he is constructing, he is building now a time machine that he is confident will be able to take even a person, even something biological like you and me, into the past or into the future. Now, I need to interview Dr. Mallett, don't I? We will go to work on that. Mallett acknowledges sending a person through time may require more energy than physicists today know how to harness. He sees it merely as an engineering problem. If it's possible to use light to send a neutron through time, a feat that doesn't require as much energy as sending a human, he believes it wouldn't be long before engineers figure out a way to send a person. So, you know, we're all over this one. We will be right back. Well, we once again, Saturday night, Sunday morning, have had to change all the clocks. Now, I've really had it with this, and I didn't want to let the night get by without every year I have to go on some kind of rant about this. The incredible stupidity of this back and forth, back spring, forward, forward, back spring, forward, forward, back. I must have 50 or 60 clocks scattered all around. Yeah, I'm into clocks. And, you know, every machine you can think of, from radios to VCRs to, you know, the list is endless now. Everything, even stoves and microwaves have clocks, right? So, good 50 or 60, and I'm about halfway through my chore this year. Why in God's name doesn't this country, some politician out there who would like to really curry the national favor of a lot of people, stop this insanity? Stop it. Give us daylight savings time all year long. Don't change the damn clocks. I'm so sick of it I could throw up. I could hurl. So some politician out there who wants to garner national favor, for God's sakes, propose something in Congress to stop this back-and-forth insanity with time. I don't know if any of you feel the same way. Obviously, I have very strong feelings about it, and I rant about it every year. This year is no exception. So damn stupid. Why do we have to go back and forth? What the hell's the point? There are a few states that are pretty smart about it, Arizona and some others, you know, they don't change. But, you know, that just sort of makes it even harder because they don't change and we do. So everything broadcast times, and I can't even begin to tell you the trouble that causes in states, you know, that are rebellious and don't change. We need to make it a national thing. See, it's a national show, right? Well, some of you write your congressman, your senator, and ask them to propose legislation that will end forever this insanity. Give us only one time daylight savings. I would think the additional daylight is good in a million different for a lot of different. Why in the world do we change in the first place? I don't know. Do you? Does anybody out there know why we even have a change? I like daylight savings. You get more light. Might have something to do with kids or the summer or, you know, I don't know. But it's insanity. Absolute insanity. All right, well, remember I told you last week that I was getting an awful lot of email from people who said they are suddenly anxious and that's an understated word, that before 9/11 they were a feeling like something was coming, and then that feeling abated for a period of time, and now it's back big time. I'm getting a lot of email, folks, from these people. Here's another. I'll read you just one. Greetings from Kansas, Art. I'm a cop. I've been a cop for 26 years. I work in a large metro and suburban area. I can generally tell if a citizen contact is going to go south before I even get out of the car, sometimes on the way. I listen to my intuition, and I've developed the gift over years. I'm a Christian, more first century than 21st, a Taoist, and a martial artist for over 35 years. Last couple of days, I felt like hitting my knees and praying to God a lot. I pray several times a day anyway, but I do feel that something bad is about to happen. I'm just now listening to a tape of the Thursday night, Friday night show, or Friday morning show, and I'm glad to know I'm not the only one. A couple of times over the last few years, I've awakened with an urge not to go to work that day, you know, or put off an assignment till the next day. And as far as I know, thus far, everything has worked out for the best. At least I'm still around. At first now, I told myself I was merely being influenced by the situation in the Middle East. I know bad things are happening in an area that's very important to me. Maybe it's more that, and I hope that anything monstrous can be averted. I did not get anxious, however, prior to 9/11. So, I mean, that is a typical email, and I'm getting so many of them. There may be some other answer to all of this. Who knows? Now, here is somebody with what sounds like, on the face of it, I know, an outrageous idea. But really, it's actually something that would work. Now, we're all worried about hijackings, correct? Hijackings like 9/11 and others, you know, we've suffered hijackings a long time. But, you know, now with the new scare from people of Arab extraction, this idea, dear sir, here's a solution for the prevention of hijackings, at the same time getting the airline industry back on its feet. Since the men of the Muslim religion are not allowed to look at naked women, why not replace all of our female flight attendants with strippers? Muslims would be afraid to get on the plane for fear of seeing a naked woman. And, of course, conversely, everybody in this country would begin to fly again, something the airlines definitely need, in hopes of seeing a naked woman. We'd have no more hijackings, and the airline industry would have record sales. Well, crazy, but you've got to admit, if you think about it, it might work.
I've been drifting on the sea of heartbreak, trying to get myself ashore for so long. For so long, listening to the strangest stories, wondering where it all went wrong. For so long, for so long. But hold on, hold on, hold on to what you got.
To read. Richard Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may Richard at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To Richard on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Now, here's another thing that's going on that is strange in the world. Vampires in Colombia. We're getting all kinds of reports of vampire activity in the capital city of Colombia, in Bogota. A dramatic increase in the number of human vampires stalking the streets there. Authorities have identified as many as 4 dozen vampire organizations in Colombia. That's a weird thing to have start happening, isn't it? We'll be right back. Open lines directly ahead. All right. Into the night. To the lines we go. On the first time caller line, you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Art.
Hello.
Hi, I was just calling to let you know about the time thing. You're wondering why it should be changed back. It would be real convenient if you could do so, but it was established by the military to confuse the enemy.
All right, so who are we trying to confuse now, sir?
All of us, no.
No, I'm serious. If that was the original reason, if the U.S. military actually established it to confuse the enemy, then who are we trying to confuse now? And if the answer is nobody major, then for God's sakes, let's get rid of it.
That's right. You know, with new modern-day technology like cell phones and atomic clocks, they all set themselves pretty much. So we'll pretty much not pay too much attention to it in the future. But like you collecting vintage clocks or whatever.
No, I don't collect vintage clocks, sir. I have atomic clocks, and they all do a great job of resetting themselves. But they are by no means, not even close to being a healthy percentage of the totality of the clocks that I have. I'm sick to death of it.
It'll take time. It's really frustrating. 60 clocks, Art. God, how do you spend time for your show? You must be setting clocks all day.
Yeah, well, you see, I can't stand to see them wrong, so I am driven. I'm type A personality, you know. I'm driven to change them all. It's just the stupidity of it. I mean, give me one good reason why we're doing it.
I don't know. You know, it's the military. You need to have somebody who will fast class you or call you up will tell you to find detailed military reason for it. But it was established by the military for some weird reason.
Right. All right. Well, I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. But if that was it, if it was established to confuse the military, then who are we trying to confuse now? Hijackers who are trying to catch airplanes? No. Listen to me. It's time to abolish this disaster, this national disaster we have twice a year called Spring Forward and Fall Back. To hell with it. I'm serious. Somebody better come up with a really good reason why we're doing this, or I'm spearheading. Every year I get more fed up and more fed up, and I will spearhead a drive to put a stake through its heart. We don't need to change times. We should all stay on the same time with the additional daylight all year long. Whatever, I know, you know, I know there's maybe some old farming stories, and everybody's going to have a million reasons why we did it, but I'm not buying into any of them. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Sir, I have a theory about why Christians are getting a very bad feeling in their gut.
It's not just Christians, though.
Well, you see, Jerusalem, let's see, okay, let's go to the Muslims. They believe that Christ was born under a tree, and they have 200 militants in the Church of the Nativity, and they don't even believe Christ was born there. Now, these people believe that Christ was a great prophet, but why don't they
follow? They're there because it's a valuable place to Christians. It's kind of an insult to Christians. I was in that building myself, huh, and I know exactly where it is. I stood at the incredible spot where Christ is said to have been born.
Oh, well, take it like this then. Maybe Muhammad is the false prophet of biblical proportion.
Well, who knows, but if it doesn't stop soon, there's going to be a war. And I guess that's what they're recognizing now in Washington. I believe I tell you what I believe about the whole Middle East thing. I think that that President Bush told the Israelis, I mean, something was going to pop. You're only going to last so long with people strapping bombs on to themselves, walking into your city's busiest areas and blowing themselves and your citizens up. I mean, nobody is going to put up with that any more than we're going to put up with anybody crashing airplanes into our tallest buildings and the Pentagon and all of that stuff. We're not doing that. We're over there kicking butt in Afghanistan, and we have only but begun. There are more butts out there waiting. You and I know who we're talking about, what countries we're talking about. It's self-defense, and if people are killing your citizens, you have a right to self-defense. Now, I think that our president told the Israelis, look, you've got X number of days, go get them, get rid of the ones that are doing the terrorism, and then withdraw. And it may be the Israelis now are overstaying their promised time. In other words, they're doing a bit more spring cleaning than Washington authorized. That's just my take on it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello, east of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hello again.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about the calls you get in about the shadowy animals.
Shadow, you mean shadow people or shadow animals?
Oh, animals. I live in Rhode Island. I live in a very active area. We have, like, the historical cemeteries, the Indian burial, an area called Kikemewit River.
You mean an active paranormal type area?
Yes, very, very active.
Okay.
My stepbrother is very sensitive to this stuff. He always sees this stuff. I never believed him. Not even an hour ago, I was out on my front porch. We have this very old chestnut tree. Now, I saw something out of the corner of my eye streak by. I looked directly at it. I could see a blur. From the corner of my eye, I could see this thing. Looking directly at it, I couldn't see it at all. Just like a little, you know, misshapen area. Yep.
Like a shadow, right?
Now, if I looked away and out of the corner of my eye, I get a clear view of it.
Yes.
I mean, it was there for a good 30 seconds.
Yes, exactly right. Thank you. I think there is substantial possibility, and as you know, we've been talking about shadow people on this program for now a long time. What is now a long time, right? I think there are shadow animals, shadow people, shadow beings. And they are at the edge of our reality, and I believe that the reason that we generally don't see them is because they are operating at a much higher frequency than we're able to usually detect. Now, one really great question would be, why are we now seeing more of them? What is changing? Most of the stories indicate they recognize when we see them. I mean, they are startled, animals or humans, these shadow beings, they are startled when they see us, or correction, when they realize we see them. And there are increasing incidences of this going on. So something out there, really intriguing, is beginning to change. Isn't it? What do you suppose that might be? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hey.
It's Robert with the Singing Schnauzer Dogs here. They said the energy was the reason for daylight savings time on the news today, for whatever that's worth. But
what do you mean?
Saving energy because you turn the lights on early and it's dark. You turn it on and you don't have to.
Hold it a minute. If it's good to save energy, then why not do it all year?
I agree.
Save more.
That's not what I call. I stacked a hang glider when I was like 21 years old. I think you told me you had a hang glider accident one time. You told the audience.
Yeah, I had a whopper.
Yeah, I was trying it out, and they were like, you know, this first time, and I just kept jumping off this sand dune. I finally really pulled my back out. So I'm 48. That was like when I was 20, I think. So I bought one of those inversion tables, you know, instead of getting a sunroof for my car, I got one of these inversion tables.
Yeah.
Started hanging upside down.
Yeah, how's that?
Well, I'd like to suck on blood now. No, I'm just kidding. It was good. It really, really worked, you know. And if I thought I'd get through to email you, I would have emailed you. But you really should get one. They're like a million times better than they used to be. They're half as much money. They're just awesome. And I don't even need one anymore, but I still have it.
Well, congratulations is all I can say to you. I've heard a lot of things about inversion tables. I've never tried it. You know, you get a table and turn upside down. I've never, that's one thing I've never tried. So it puts a weight totally going the other way. Oh, yeah, my hang gliding accident. Ooh, that was a whopper. That really was a whopper. And the funny part was, you know, it was part of a radio promotion and everything. The instructor told me, nothing can go wrong. You know, we're on this hill and nothing can go wrong. And well, then as I lay there with my arm broken, shattered, and the hang glider on top of my arm, you know, the crossbow on top of my arm, I looked up the instructor who was right there, and I said, I thought you said nothing could go wrong. He said, well, right, except nobody could have accounted for this crosswind. You know, he never told me there could be a crosswind and then something could go wrong. He told me that as I lay there with this numb, horrible, broken arm. But I still have this irrepressible urge to fly. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Ms. Bell?
I'm okay, sir. Where are you?
I'm at the Kennedy Space Center.
Oh, no kidding. You're actually You're actually at the Space Center?
I'm at the Space Center, correct.
Uh-huh. You're there to observe. You're going to see the launch?
Yes, sir.
Boy, lucky you.
Well, actually, in my house is about 10 minutes away. We can go out. There's a group of us. There's a little park out the end of the street, and we just go down there and just watch the launches.
Oh, you're kidding.
Right.
That must be, I guess, to you, does it ever get routine, or is it so cool every time?
It is so cool every time, because I want to go every time.
I thought so. I thought you'd say that. I've never attended a launch. I would love to.
Oh, the night ones are great.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. I've seen, of course, television, but television is just a box, you know, and even as good a job as they do is not like being there.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right.
Anyway, anything I can do for you otherwise?
Well, I'm from Lexington, Kentucky, and you mentioned something about the cloning.
Yes.
That doesn't surprise me at all, being Kentucky, and I believe just last weekend you had someone from your town say something about a bee problem.
Oh, yes. She was driving between Las Vegas and the Pahrump side over here and ran into 2 solid miles of bees.
In University of Kentucky, in a state park, the only bees in the world that make a specific type of a wax that they use for reconstruction of surgery, for burns, and for plastic surgery is in Kentucky.
Huh. I'll be darned.
And I just think somehow that's connected.
Well, might be. As far as the clones go, I knew the first clone would be of an egotistical, rich person. And at the end of the week last week, we had the news that the first clone is now 8 weeks in the cooker, right? Then Monday, today, we find out it's going to be the clone of a rich Arab. Hence, of course, the Italian researcher over there in the United Arab Emirates doing his thing. So here come the clones. Isn't it interesting? The moment we acquire a technology, I mean, this is really something that we should all think really hard about. I'm telling you. The moment that we acquire a technology, it doesn't matter the ethical, the moral debates. We go ahead with it anyway, don't we? No matter what. Now, this means something for us in totality. It means something for the human race. I knew it would occur with cloning, and sure as hell, here it is. And it's true of several other things that are sort of on the brink right now. Technology is on the brink of a lot of very interesting things. And the case I'm making here is that no matter what, no matter what laws they pass, no matter what they do, these various things in science are going to happen. They're going to be tried. And I'm telling you, this has meaning for all of us somewhere down the line, because somebody is going to try something that is going to have a profound impact on all of us. some genetic something or another, something I probably can't even imagine right now. Cloning, maybe, something like that. They will plunge ahead no matter what. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, I was on your...
I can barely hear you, sir. You're on a bad cell phone, but we'll give it a try.
Is this better?
Yeah, a little bit, yes.
Okay. My name's Chris, by the way. I was on your website, and I was going to ask you about, is it the chupacabra?
Yes.
Okay.
What do you want to know?
Just, is it myth? Is it more myth, or is there actual proof that it exists, or...
Oh, there's plenty of proof, sir. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of sightings. There are animals that were mutilated in a very specific way that were strewn across the American Southwest, in Mexico, South America, all over the place, probably going back to Puerto Rico and then jumping across to South America is what it looks like.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Is it kind of like a wolverine type looking animal, or
the pictures the people have drawn are pretty horrible. I mean, it's like something out of a Stephen King film. You know, it's not a good creature, and it's also said, by the way, to move extremely fast, 60, 70 miles an hour, something like that. So I don't know. Maybe its reputation is a little bigger than it is. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art. I've been trying to reach you since probably about 1996. I'm glad I finally got through to you.
That's a long time to try to get through.
That's a long time, but it's important.
Okay, fire
ahead.
Or else
I wouldn't bother you.
Go ahead.
There's a lot I have to talk about. We can't talk about it all tonight. I'll probably email you after we talk tonight.
So. All right, well, give me the hot points right here.
Okay, one is you were talking about the shadow people.
Yes.
They're dimensional people, creatures, entities, whatever you want to call them. They're from another dimension, the same as most of the alien craft that we see in our atmosphere.
Well, while that is certainly possible, how do you say it like that as a definite statement?
Well, I talked to Dr. Stanton Friedman in 1999, and I asked him, should I call you? And... because I hadn't been able to get through to you, so I talked to him. I was able to reach him, and I talked to him, and I told him that the reason I wanted to talk to you is because the ship that was shot down in 1947,
Roswell.
I was on board that ship.
You were on board the Roswell craft that was shot down?
Yeah.
That would make you... That would make you an alien, yes?
Yes.
You're an alien.
Genetically altered, though.
You're an alien.
Yes. I know that's hard. I know that's very hard to believe.
No, let me ride with it. We only have a short amount of time. Where are you from?
Well, on this planet, I'm from Indiana. But the actual planet I'm from, it's not even in this dimension. It's, it's in an entire different galaxy. Nothing like anything we can imagine. Because I was so young when it happened, I don't even know the name of our planet. My parents were killed.
How did you live through the crash?
I don't know. Probably because I was so young.
I mean, were you raised by some New Mexico farmer?
I was
farmer,
raised by people on this planet.
No. In the most immediate, I mean, what happened to you? Did a New Mexico farmer find you and raise you?
No, actually, I'm convinced the government found me.
The government found you.
And took me away and then put me with an Earth family so that I could, evolve normally.
So you were adopted?
Yes. I know it sounds strange.
Now,
wouldn't take up your time.
It does sound strange, you're right, but how about proof? Do you have any proof all of this is true?
Well.
Any at all?
Reoccurring dreams. The ship that shot us down was a ship trying to stop my parents from getting here to warn Earth or the governments of this planet about the upcoming events that have everybody so nervous. The 9/11 was bad, but what's getting ready to happen is even worse than that.
I'm afraid at the moment we're going to have to... So Stanton told you to call, huh? All right, we'll break here and be right back.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
I am so inextricably interested in the subject of time. I think that's why I like this record. That and the harmony. Coming up in a moment, Dr. Russell Targ is a physicist and author who was pioneer in the development of the laser. That's quite an achievement, development of the laser, and co-founder of the Stanford Research Institute's investigation into psychic abilities in the 1970s and 80s. Recently retired from Lockheed Martin as a senior staff scientist, where he developed laser technology for peaceful applications. He's written about 50 articles on lasers, plasmas, and electro-optics research. And he's just and so much more. And he's just around the corner, so keep your radio planted. This is Coast. Now, the interesting thing about Russell Targ is that while he did all of that hard science stuff, and obviously he did, highly credentialed, he's very much into, I guess, the other side, remote viewing. He's a big believer in the power of prayer. He has written any number of books, The Heart of the Mind, How to Know God Without Belief, which is interesting. Book Miracles of the Mind, Exploring Non-Local Consciousness and Spiritual Healing. Just all kinds of things that we constantly talk about on this program. Dr. Targ, welcome to the show.
I'm very happy to be with you this evening.
I'm very happy to have you. I know that we always do this when we've talked, but it seems incredible to me that somebody who virtually invented the laser would move from such a totally hard science, physics, area of physics, into metaphysics, which is basically what you've done.
Well, it's all about experience rather than belief. When I was a graduate student at Columbia University, I was also doing magic on the stage. And every magician has the experience from time to time that you're standing, pretending to read the mind of somebody in the audience, and you have the experience of knowing more about that person than you should have known from the trick. And even magicians who hate ESP will tell you in private conversations that they have had that experience. That is, when you're standing with the lights in your eyes, you have the demand of a big audience.
Yes.
You can supplement your trickery by whatever kinds of ESP comes your way. And after you do that for a number of years, you get to learn to separate out the psychic signal from your memory and imagination.
How many magicians who do that kind of work do you think would substantiate what you're saying and say, yeah, right on?
I know Melbourne Christopher would, because he was a consultant for our Stanford Research Institute work. When we started out working for the CIA, we had any number of people come to our laboratory, and one of the things that we promised all of our government sponsors is that we were not going to be deceived by visiting tricksters who had passed through our lab. So even though I had considerable experience with magic, we wanted a well-known professional like Milburn Christopher to stand behind the curtains and make sure we weren't fooled.
Uh-huh.
So we had a lot of conversations with him about the way people will try and deceive you and the extent to which when you're doing a trick, you often get information coming to you. For example, when I was trying to sell our first program to NASA, I had prepared a card trick just to deal with the issue, are we going to be fooled by magicians? And what I prepared was a trick where I would cleverly force a card so he would have the experience of shuffling the deck and choosing a card, and then I would open my little notebook and I would say, today we have the Eight of Clubs for George, and he was stunned because his impression is that he had carefully shuffled the pack. We then did it again. He just grabbed the cards, said, that's a great trick, I want to see it again. He grabbed the cards and shuffled them. And of course, the second time he shuffled them, I had no way to do it. But I just got a mental picture of another card, the Eight of Diamonds, and with lots of demurs, I said, we never repeat a trick. What I see is the Three of Diamonds.
Uh-huh.
And there it was, and he gave us the money.
That's excellent.
So we've had to do magic year after year for the CIA.
Well, I was going to ask you, I wanted to go back and ask, what's it like working for the CIA? I mean, how's the CIA as an employer? Are they... is it everything that civilians out here think it's like, or is it very unlike the way it's popularized in the, you know, in motion pictures and television?
It's popularized. You have a mixture of highly intelligent, thoughtful people.
Yes.
Intermixed with a number of crazy people.
Crazy people.
Who have their own ideas. As we were doing outstanding work for the CIA describing distant Soviet sites, and part of the evaluation was that the photo interpreter said, we can't look at this because it's from the devil. So even though the analysts loved what we were doing, some of the people felt that it was satanic. So even at the highest levels of the intelligence agency,
oh, really?
You have people who have a hard time.
So you were running up against sort of a Christian a wall.
That's right.
Oh, that, now, I've never heard that. I'd never heard that. I'd heard that, you know, there was disdain for the program, but I've never heard anybody go into the kind of detail you just did.
When we had our most successful work with Pat Price, who is our very psychic police commissioner, he was able to describe what was going on in the Soviet Union, where he described a research facility, and he did it with very great accuracy. In fact, the accuracy was so great that we wound up having a congressional investigation of our work.
If there's that much accuracy, I'm going to ask you a pretty bold question, all right? A lot of people are fast blasting. And by the way, may I ask what kind of phone you're on?
I'm on a landline. I'm not exactly sure what you're...
I'm getting a little distortion in the audio, and I was wondering... What kind of phone? Whether we had an option.
You can probably hold it away from me and not shout into the mouthpiece.
That might help.
Would that be better?
Yeah. Oh, that does seem to be an improvement, yes.
I mean, you're a long way away, so I'm sort of shouting at you.
Yeah, we may have to dial and get another line here at the bottom of the hour, no problem. But working for the CIA, you say they're what you would call some crazy people there. Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, there is a large body of belief out there, Doctor, that where the information comes from, the information that remote viewers gather, that there could be trickery involved, that in fact it could be coming from some negative entity. Can you entirely rule that out?
See, I sort of don't know how to respond to negative entity. I'm basically an unreconstructed physicist, so I believe in data. I've now seen thousands of remote viewing trials with people all over the world, and just an ordinary ability. We've traveled to Italy and France and Holland and all over America, showing thousands and thousands of people how to do remote viewing.
Doctor, I don't for one second doubt remote viewing. It passed my test a long time ago. We know it's real.
I don't think entities are involved. I think it's just an ability.
Just an ability.
It's neither sacred nor satanic. It's just an ability. Our contribution is to give people permission to do it. Because in the society, psychic ability is forbidden, and therefore it's repressed. And as I go around lecturing and writing books, I tell people, this is your native human ability. I can tell you how to do it and show you in an afternoon how to do it. And people are able to simply incorporate that into their lives.
Through what medium do you believe the information is being gleaned or the ability is being exercised? Through what medium?
I think that we live in a non-local world. That is to say, you and I are separated in the physical plane by 1,500 miles.
Uh-huh.
But in consciousness, I think that there is no separation. So if I were a young physicist today, going into research, I would probably be doing research in non-local physics. That is, exploring the extent to which things that appear to be separated are actually connected.
Are you aware, Doctor, of the experiments being done at Princeton? Do you know all about that, with the computer they have there, and then what they call these eggs all over the world?
Yes.
That are
Roger Nelson's work.
Yes, you know about that?
Yes, I'm very familiar with that.
Did you see the graph of the 9/11 event, where about 4 hours prior to the event, the thing went nuts right off the graph, and then, of course, the event itself, and then it trailed off afterward?
Yes, it certainly looks like, I think they have 36 random event generators all over the world.
That's right. Eggs.
And they all became surprisingly non-random.
Just prior to the 9/11
event. Prior to the 9/11 event.
Right. Now, do you believe that those graphs are somehow representing some sort of mass consciousness reaction? And of course, the 4 hour prior to the event thing, it says a lot about the nature of time itself. I mean, it's really intriguing. Is that what you think they're looking at?
Well, Roger Nelson and Dean Radin, who looked extensively at that data, are very convinced that it shows this kind of coherence occurring just before the event.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's possibly what it shows. The statistics are really not high enough to get me very excited about a one-time event like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because although it's a significant event, if the whole world came to its feet at 8:30 in the morning, then I would expect the event on the random number generator to be around 8:30 rather than around 6 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
So the postulate is that the whole world is galvanized by a world event, and therefore all the remote random number generators will become coherent or incoherent. There's no even talking point. There's no ontology that says 2.5 hours before the event you should see significance. Because if you have a broad enough space and time, when you're looking at the random number generators, before or after or during, then you can always find something. If there had been a big spike when the airplanes hit the towers, then I would be quite excited.
Well, it did coincide time-wise, the big spike.
It was a couple hours before.
Well, it was before, and then
and
through.
And then if you average it for several hours, then the average can be made to coincide. But that's the result of data averaging.
And their work also goes, and I didn't realize this until then, but it goes back to monitoring. They've been doing this now for some time and relating it to world events. I don't know that they've got an ironclad case yet, but something interesting is going on.
It's an interesting arena. The best data I've seen like that was with the O.J. Simpson verdict, which is an experiment that Dean Radin did, where you have a pinpoint event. The whole world is holding their breath for the envelope to be opened and the verdict to be read.
Yes.
In that case, you have a very large spike in the worldwide random number generators as
there you go.
The verdict was read. So that's the convincing thing that makes people continue to do this work.
Well, that's why I was asking. In other words, do you think that might be in some way sensing or reading into the arena in which you deal with remote viewing?
It's a possibility. The interaction with machines is very much weaker than the interaction with people.
Sure.
The mind-to-mind connection or the mind-to-animal or the mind-to-body connection is 1,000 times stronger than the mind-to-machine connection, which is why in all my work that I've done at SRI and afterwards, I've always been involved either in healing or medical diagnosis or describing what another person is experiencing, just because that's so much stronger. Our empathy for another person is hugely stronger than our empathy for a machine. At least that would be true for most of us.
All right. I'm aware of some information which I only asked your permission to bring up, and it would seem like a good moment to do that. I know your daughter is in a really tough situation right now, and I know you don't want to talk a whole lot about it, but let's talk enough about it so that we can give something a try here. What's going on with your daughter, Doctor?
Well, my daughter, Elizabeth Clark, is a psychiatrist and has been a pioneer in distant healing and distant prayer, where she has conducted many experiments at her hospital in California, where people all over the country will pray for half of her AIDS patients.
Right.
And in her published research, she's shown that the half receiving the prayers have much better outcome than the ones receiving no prayers.
The results were incredible, actually. Those prayer tests, just absolutely incredible. I mean, indisputable.
Data. Published in prestigious medical journals.
Would appear irrefutable.
Yes, and it's now been replicated in other laboratories, and that's what researchers love to see.
Well, we'll talk more about that, but what is her personal situation?
Her situation is that she's very ill now with a brain tumor.
A brain tumor.
And
oh my God!
I would be very happy if 1 million listeners around the country would send her the kind of healing prayers that have in the past been sent to her patients. This is not a research experiment, but as a father and as a scientist and as a caring person, I would be confident and very hopeful if your listeners would share their flow of loving awareness with Elizabeth and send them her prayers for a speedy recovery.
I think that would be a really good thing for us to do, and I can't see any downside to it at all. I hope everybody out there will take just a moment, and you know, we've done these experiments very rarely, but they work. They absolutely, irrefutably work. I've had experiments on that I've done that are just astounding. And so I think we ought to give it a try here and send her some nice white light or whatever healing energy the individual can manifest. I want to talk a little bit about the nature of this force, and it is a gigantic, and it's an incredible force. And I don't understand it. It's kind of like magic, Doctor. And we're going to have to step around some pretty delicate areas. You said you ran into some Christian problems when you were in the CIA, religious objection to what you were doing. And so it might be worth a little bit of discussion between yourself and myself here about exactly what it is that we're doing. Now, I tell you, leave it at that. I want to think about exactly how I want to phrase this. Headed toward the bottom of the hour, but if you would be kind enough to send a blast of healing energy toward Elizabeth, who's in a very tough situation with a brain tumor right now. Take a moment during this upcoming break and close your eyes and concentrate and send healing energy. There's no question about it. It works. So for one who's done that work, I think she deserves a moment or two of healing from all of us. Let's give it our best shot. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Richard Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Man, you're listening to Dr. Russell Targ, received his B.S. in physics from Queens College, New York. 1954, graduate work in physics from Columbia University, 54 through 56. Received two National Aeronautics and Space Administration Awards for inventions and contributions in lasers and laser communication inventions. Invitations, were accepted in 1983 and 4 to present demonstrations and to address the USSR Academy of Sciences on recent developments in remote viewing research. She'll be right back. Once again, Dr. Targ, now on a different telephone, and we may get rid of the crackling here. That's great. What we just did works. What I don't understand is how it works. How does it work? Why does it work? Can you answer any of those questions? Millions of minds gathering together, healing, work. Why?
Well, no, of course, nobody knows the answer to that. What we believe is that it's a non-local, non-energetic phenomena. The reason we say it's non-local is because from the research that's been published, is that we know that to affect the health or the physiology of a distant person, it doesn't matter how close or how far away they are.
Right.
These things work across the room or across the country. So that's what you mean by a non-local phenomena. and we'd say it's non-energetic for the same reason, is that there is energetic healing. There are energy healers. When she puts her hand near you, you can feel the blast of energy in your body, and that's an energy healer. That's the sort of thing that Barbara Brennan teaches, and Reiki practitioners. On the other hand, there are spiritual healers and other prayer groups who recognize that you don't have to be in the person's neighborhood at all.
No.
In fact, if you talk to an experienced Reiki healer, they'll say, well, normally we stand next to the person, but of course the distance doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's why you would say it's a non-local effect.
What have you, how much have you proven to yourself? In other words, how much hard science on this have you done to know that this healing works? How many times have you documented with, I don't know, medical records or, you know, good hard science?
Well, I'm, of course, not a healer, but
I understand.
Because my co-author, Jane Catra, is a healer. And in Miracles of Mind, our first book together, we document three big studies that were done in distant healing.
Tell me about them.
One of them was the one that my daughter Elizabeth did, where she had people pray for half of her AIDS patients, and the patients who received the prayers had much better outcomes than the ones receiving no prayers. That is, the people who were prayed for had fewer trips to the doctor, fewer opportunistic illnesses.
Right.
And that was published in the Western Medical Journal.
Huh.
Another study published by William Harris had almost 1,000 cardiac patients at St. Louis University, published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and the heart patients who were prayed for had fewer interventions and fewer complications.
Yes.
And the famous study by Randolph Bird, published in the Southern Medical Journal, similarly had Catholic prayer groups praying for half of his cardiac patients. Now, in all of these studies, all the patients wish to be in a healing group, but they never know whether or not they're being prayed for.
Right.
So it's not that people feel that they're being prayed for so they get better. It's that the specific people whose pictures are handed out to the healers, those are the people who get better. So the evidence is quite strong from these three studies. In fact, a big analysis of the studies was published again in Annals of Internal Medicine by John Aston, reporting on all the studies that have been published concerning distant healing. And this is again in a major medical journal, so this is a new hot topic for medicine. And Aston's finding is that the evidence for distant prayer, distant mental influence, that phenomena is very strong data, and working with Dr. Catra, I have seen her go into her healing state and send what she thinks of as a healing template to a distant person, and immediately there's a change in their physiology and a change in their health.
Yes.
So the published data is what we hang our hat on as a scientist.
Sure.
But through a decade of working with Jane Catra, I've just seen her again and again, just at a party, which is a thing that ultimately comes down to what happened at the party. And in this case, the man who had not walked in a year with severe arthritis, Jane just stood by his chair at his wife's invitation. After 10 minutes of silence, he left both of his canes on the floor, stood up out of his chair, walked across the room, and made a sandwich, and his wife almost fell off of her chair. She said, that man has not gotten out of a chair in a year without help. Now, we don't know what transpired between them, what Jane did, but it's one of these cases. He threw away the canes, got up, and made a sandwich.
Huh.
So I've seen enough of them, this kind of thing, so I'm really confident that there is a mind-to-mind interaction between the healer and the patient.
There's no question about it. Do you think that it makes any difference at all whether the people who do the praying believe in God and pray and channel their prayers through God, or simply use the power of their mind to project? Is there, do you believe there's any difference?
I think certainly the spiritual healers, such as Dr. Katra, believe in God and surrender to a higher power, but there are other healers who you can talk to in privacy, and they say, I hate to admit it, but I did it by myself.
So it may not matter. It may be the power of a living human mind.
That's what it appears, because healers have told me all kinds of different strategies as to what they're doing. And even this very famous healer told me sort of over dinner, I was asking her this exact question. She said, as far as I can tell, I'm doing it myself. I just focus my attention on the person I'm trying to heal, and the pain goes away.
That wouldn't be a popular view, though, to necessarily express, would it?
Well, I think the Reiki healers and the energy healers feel that they are using their mind to focus energy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of...
I know, but I'm just saying that in terms of the way there would be potential acceptance to not suggest that your power is coming from God would probably put about a million more stumbling blocks in front of you than you'd have otherwise, eh?
That's right. In the film Resurrection,
yes,
Ellen
yes.
Burstyn got into trouble from saying, I don't know about this God stuff. I just seem to be able to help people.
That's right. It was a perfect example, that film. I'll never forget that movie, in fact.
But the Reiki healers and the energy healers and all the people who do therapeutic touch are not involved in a spiritual practice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Certainly, most of the healing we know about has been through prayer circles who follow the teachings of Jesus, who had many, many healings described in the Bible.
Oh, yes.
And he said, what I have done, you shall also do, and even greater things shall you do.
Mm-hmm.
So in the biblical text, Jesus was very affirmative
mm-hmm.
about not only his healing, but about our being healers as well. I should tell you that I got a call from the hospital room where two people were awake listening to you in the dark. Of course, Elizabeth is asleep. And they just called to say, amazing thing happened. They were sitting there. They don't know how my daughter is, but the room was just filled with light at the bottom of the hour.
Oh, I know.
And they just called me in astonishment.
I appreciate the report, but I'm not astonished. That's an incredible report, but I'm not astonished. I've just seen this happen too many times. I know it's real, Doctor. It's as real, as tangible as this desk in front of me and everything else. The threshold for this was passed a long time ago, so I'm really pleased to hear it, but I'm not astonished. It's a fact. This thing we're talking about is real.
Jane and I got together when I was diagnosed with cancer 10 years ago. They were getting ready to do chemotherapy, and my friendly HMO rolled me out on a gurney cart, delivered me to this healer that I knew slightly, and asked her if she would help me get ready for chemotherapy.
Uh-huh.
And Jane said, well, from what I see, I don't even think he's sick. So you had this wonderful moment of truth between the spiritual healer looking at the oncologist and the radiologist who had just told me to get my affairs in order, called my two doctor children to help their old man get ready to die, and this healer says he may not be sick.
Huh.
And, of course, it's now 10 years later, and I'm fatter and sassier than ever and seem to be doing okay.
He may not be sick? That's an interesting statement. He may not be sick.
And what she says is that what they had was marks on film. Just don't tell people you're sick. Let's just go home. And she taught me new behaviors like praying and getting reconnected with my support group and friends and getting exercise and visualizations and meditations and all sorts of things, eating my peas and carrots. And 6 weeks later, all the films were different. That is, the things that they were ready to operate on and do chemotherapy looked entirely different under higher resolution.
And so, medically, what did they say that, in other words, the original diagnosis was incorrect?
Well, there were two very... Well, that's always what
the doctors.
Spiritual healer hears. The highest praise she ever gets is it was a misdiagnosis.
Yeah, of course.
But the hospital had two very unattractive possibilities. One is they told a well man that he was going to die. That's a very bad outcome.
Yeah.
The other is that a man who was about to die couldn't be helped by the hospital and was cured by a spiritual healer. Hospital doesn't like that one either.
No, not at all. That wouldn't be good for business now, would it?
So in Miracles of Mind, we tell that whole involved story, and Jane goes on to describe what it takes to be a spiritual healer and how you might incorporate that into your life.
Now,
so
it doesn't always work. In other words, there are people with cancers and other problems, you know, that go to healers, and healers don't have a 100% record. Sometimes it doesn't work. And you've got to wonder why it works enough of the time that I think any reasonable person can prove to themselves that it is absolutely real. But then in those cases where it does not work, what do we say to ourselves?
Well, all of these psychic experiments work some of the time and don't work some of the time.
Exactly.
And it's the nature of the mental state of the healer. And in the case of healing a sick person, the person may be so sick that it's simply their time to die, and that they're generally, if a person has a multitude of things the matter with them, the healer is not going to be able to help them.
I see.
If you have a single thing the matter with them, the healer can often help. Oftentimes, a healer is called in for somebody's 85-year-old grandmother who has many, many different problems. Can you save this old lady? And the answer is probably not.
And that's a good answer to the question. I wonder, in cases of singular, perhaps upcoming fatal disease, what kind of percentage a good healer can have?
I don't know the answer to that. In the work that Elizabeth did, she had only 60 people in the study that she did, and she had highly significant results. I can tell you something interesting comparing Elizabeth's study and my daughter's study at California Pacific Medical Center and the two other studies, in that her results were much stronger than the other two. In my opinion, that was because she worked with only experienced healers. The other two studies of heart patients worked with well-intentioned people, but who were not necessarily experienced. All of Elizabeth's healers had been doing healing for at least 5 years, which is to say, if it wasn't working for them, they wouldn't continue to do it for 5 years.
And does one see a linear progression in the ability of the healer from the time they take this on as their personal crusade in science? Do you see a linear progression in their abilities over a 5-10 year period, whatever?
I don't have experience in that regime. I can tell you that people learn to have better and better control of their psychic perception over the years.
Mm-hmm.
As I started with one of our Army recruits, Joe McMonagall, and I sat in the lab and we figured out together how he could do remote viewing, and 10 years later he has gotten more and more accurate and not lost ability but gained ability. So he has gotten in touch with his own mental process, so that he has become one of the very most proficient remote viewers in the world after 10 years of practice. These things are an intellectual ability where you learn to separate memory and imagination and analysis from the psychic signal. So
here's what a lot of people are saying. It's a hot-button question. If remote viewing can do all of these things, then why have we not yet found Bin Laden? Can you explain from a remote viewing point of view why nobody's located Bin Laden?
Well, I don't know that the government has mounted a effort to use remote viewers to find Bin Laden, although my guess would be they've contacted freelance remote viewers.
I would bet they have.
Remote viewers can't read the street address, generally. So you can only describe, a remote viewer can tell you what it looks like where the person is.
Uh-huh.
If the person's in a cave, he can say, I see exactly where he is. He's inside a cave. It's pretty dark where he is. There are lots of rocks, and it's bright on the outside. And that may be a perfectly accurate description, but it's not very helpful.
So that would answer why those who've been contacted might not have been able to find him.
For example, we were able to describe in great detail what was going on at a Chinese weapons test and a Soviet R&D facility and the Iran hostage case.
Oh, yes.
Because that's a fixed place, and you can describe what's going on there. It's much harder to describe where a submarine is. You say, I see the submarine. You can describe the sub, but then it's just, I see it. It's 100 meters above the sandy bottom surrounded by water.
Yeah, but that doesn't tell you where it is.
There are no landmarks.
That's a good point.
So remote viewing works excellently. We spent 25 years playing psychic hide-and-go-seek, describing what it looks like where somebody is. Looked inside the Kremlin and just all over the world because there's stuff to describe. If all you have are, for example, hiding in the subway or hiding in a cave,
yeah,
would make it very tough, even if the perfect was person with a perfect remote viewer, because there's no landmarks.
Well, I would imagine at this point, our government certainly has come to the point of frustration with regard to locating bin Laden, that they have contacted some remote viewers. Obviously, we're never going to hear about it, but I wouldn't be surprised. You haven't heard any rumblings, have you?
I think remote viewers have been contacted.
I see. That's
my
a rumble.
My opinion is that he could be found if you put together a team of remote viewers and did a number of different things. Stephen Schwartz was very good at putting together a team of remote viewers to find things that were hard to find.
Maybe they better get you guys back together for a reunion. What do you think?
I think that would be a very good idea.
Hold on, Doctor. We'll be right back. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
No, I really was not surprised by what the report we got from the doctor's daughter's room from two people. Not at all surprised. This may be the most powerful force in the entire universe. Thing is, we don't understand a lot about it yet. We really need to understand a whole lot more about what we're dealing with. A healing that seems a fairly safe avenue to pursue, but I'm telling you all, we're really into an area here that not too many of us know a whole lot about. We've got one person who does. He's on the phone. He'll be right back. Well, as I said, Doctor, this may be the most powerful force in the universe, in the world. I say the world, the universe, everywhere. It may be the single most powerful force in the end. I've contemplated that, and we know so very little about it. I mean, we your daughter, for example, and her studies and the other studies, and we know that it's real. We don't understand enough about it, and I worry about things like the law of unintended consequences. I've learned a lot about that one lately. Healing would be a fairly safe route to go, but if this is a power, then if it's like all other powers, it can be good. It can be used for good, or perhaps some negative reason. Do you believe that to be true or untrue?
Well, I think that with regard to the first thing you said, it's sensible to say that it's the most powerful force because it's a non-local force.
Right.
That is, anything that you can do that has the same force across the room or thousands of miles away is a very remarkable capability because it's independent of distance.
That's right. And time. And time.
Well, William Broad is a psychologist who believes that it's independent of time from his experiments, where he had data showing that he had people breathing quietly, and at a later time you could hear the tapes of their breathing, and people were instructed to help people breathe faster or breathe slower on a random schedule.
Right.
And they were able to do that, and the only way that could have occurred is if the mental process of the person on the second day actually affected the breathing of the person on the first day. I think that was actually done by Helmut Schmidt and reported recently by William Broad, called as a kind of retroactive healing.
So that would appear to cross the time barrier.
That's right. William is very interested in this retroactive healing. He published a paper on it in Larry Dossey's journal, Alternative Therapies, where he says that one of the things that a healer can do is heal a sick person at an earlier time, to not change things presently, but to change the trajectory that the healing person is on.
Wow.
They've passed through time and space and gotten to this moment. And with your healing intention or your loving prayers, you send them on a healthful trajectory, but the activity could have occurred from the present into the past.
Okay. Well, that, again, would seem to be consistent with the claims of the abilities of remote viewers, unlike yourself. Remote viewers say that there is no barrier to time in terms of remote viewing, that you can remote view the past, the present, and the future.
In the remote viewing, I'm, of course, more confident that I know that you can remote view into the future. You can describe events in the future just as easily as in the present. In fact, I would say the most interesting thing that I could communicate to you tonight is the abundance of data showing that it's no more difficult to know the future than it is to know the hidden present. And that's why we are very confident that it's a non-local ability, because neither distance nor time matters in your ability to expand your awareness through both space and time.
Well,
it shows that we really misapprehend the nature of the space-time that we live in.
Well, then, to me, it suggests that healers and remote viewers are dealing in some way, or mixing it up in some way, with the same medium, with the same the same pathways, the same non-locality. There are too many parallels for it not to be true.
Yeah, the parallels, is it the healers, the remote viewers, and the physicists are all seeing non-local phenomenon. The first person in the hard sciences in the Western world to talk about non-locality was Einstein, who in the 1930s wrote a paper, which is now well known with Podolsky and Rosen. It's called the EPR paper, where Einstein said that quantum mechanics predicts that photons traveling in the opposite directions will still interact with one another if they were born together. So if you have twin photons traveling away from each other, and you collect one of the photons with a polarizer, the other photon will be affected. And Einstein predicted that and said that doesn't make any sense because that would be a spooky connection at distance, a telepathic connection between the photons. Therefore, he felt quantum mechanics was wrong.
I had not heard of this paper by Einstein. That's very interesting.
This is a very famous EPR paper, 1935. Einstein was attacking quantum mechanics because it gave this non-local result.
Well, now, of course...
Now we've done experiments showing that Einstein was correct in his analysis. You do have this spooky connection at a distance. Even though the photons are traveling away from each other at the speed of light, there is an instantaneous connection between the photons.
Well, modern living genius physicists' minds are beginning to explore these areas themselves. It's very interesting watching it occur, and talking to different physicists, theoretical physicists. Oh, they're all beginning to move in that direction. I have a feeling that the roads are going to intersect not very far downstream.
Now, this photon business is not the explanation for ESP. The photon connection occurs because we live in a non-local universe. So it's the nature of the space-time we live in. It's the connectivity of space-time that allows both the photon connection and the remote viewing and the distant healing.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, the Buddhists knew this 2,500 years ago because in every page of the Buddhist teachings, you find that separation is an illusion, that in consciousness there is only one of us here. So a premier teaching is that there's no separation, that we're all connected in consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Even my idol, Erwin Schrödinger, who was the person who perfected quantum mechanics, when he wrote about consciousness, he said, consciousness is a singular of which there is no plural. What gives the appearance of a multitude of consciousness is just an optical delusion, such as living in a hall of mirrors.
So there is only one consciousness.
There's only one of us here in consciousness. We all have bodies, but it's a big cause of suffering to believe that you are a body. You're an awareness residing in a body, and that awareness, we know, has mobility through space and time.
Then what would be your view, Doctor, of our consciousness upon physical death?
Well, we'll go back to the data. That Ian Stevenson at University of Virginia in Charlottesville has devoted his life to examining the question of what survives. And Stevenson has written a dozen books now showing that children come into the world frequently with memories of earlier lifetimes.
Yes.
And he's documented this very well, where a little child will wind up with knowledge of another language or calling for his wife in an earlier life.
No question about it. I'm not sure, though, that exactly answers a question about consciousness. In other words, it could be, a million things. It could be genetics, it could be genetic memory, it could be cellular memory, cellular transference memory from the mother to the child, it could be a lot of things. I'm not sure that documents that the consciousness we're talking about, the the individual awareness of the mass consciousness, if you will, survives death. What do you think?
Well, it appears that an individual, since individual memories seem to survive, that these children have memories of an earlier life. Sometimes they remember how they were murdered, so that the murderer is actually caught as a result of the memories of some four-year-old.
That's right. Yes, I've heard that.
Now, I just read a very interesting book about brilliant children. It's called Nature's Gambit, where you had a six-month-old who started talking, and he had prodigious memories of his previous life. And the theory I have right now is that you don't have more discussions, more memories of previous lives, is that the kids lose the memories before they're able to speak. So in this case, it's very well documented with the child of a psychiatrist, and the child had many, many memories of things that could be documented of an earlier life, and we know about all those memories because he was talking at 6 months old.
Oh my God.
So I think the reason that we don't have more evidence of survival of consciousness is because you lose your memories before you learn to speak.
Okay.
But I think that the evidence that some aspect of our personality survives, that evidence is pretty good. On the other hand, not much survives. So I think you shouldn't put off to next lifetime anything that you want to get accomplished.
Yeah, live for today. Well, sure, but it. I had somebody say to me the other day, Art, the starlight that you see when you go outside, that's been going for hundreds or thousands or millions or even billions of years when you look at the deepest stars. And it just keeps on going, virtually, eternally, and that you could think of your consciousness in somewhat the same way, that you could even imagine that it would stay together, continue to travel in a coherent fashion after physical death. Now, how much lingers in somebody else in whatever way it does, that's another question, but that consciousness does continue, that you continue to be conscious after physical death in that same manner.
Well, my all-time favorite experiment was done by the English researcher F.W. Myers that he describes in his Human Personality book, which I have just republished with Hampton Roads. The thing that's so great about Myers' experiment is that he wanted to know if human personality survives. He described an experiment that could only be done by a deceased person coming back and communicating with many different mediums. And then Myers died and carried out the experiment, which puts him in a class all by himself. After Myers died, he sent fragmentary information to the daughter of Rudyard Kipling in India, to a classic scholar, Mrs. Verrell, in London, and to Eleanor Piper in Boston. Each of those women recognized that it was Myers speaking to them. They're talking about a 1905 experiment. So there's no telephone.
Hmm.
They would send in Myers' communications to the Society for Psychical Research in London. There they could put them three disjoint things together, and they would find that it was a little story or an epigram of the kind of things that Myers would put together because he was a classical scholar, and they could find the classical reference. So this went on for a decade. This is called the cross-correspondence experiments. So Myers designed an experiment, passed away, and then carried out the experiment. Cross-correspondence experiment.
That's remarkable.
So there's very strong evidence from this that went on for a long time, well documented, that in this case, at least, Myers survived to carry out the experiment he wanted to do.
I get computer messages when we're doing this program. When we did the experiment with regard to Elizabeth an hour or so ago, and you had a report that there was a light in the room. Many, many, many people are asking, what did the two see or notice, and how did they sense this? Or so did you get any
further?
That's
really a personal, these are really two people sitting a vigil with a sleeping person. I don't want to go into
what
their experience was.
That's fine.
It was enough of an experience that they called me on another line during the break.
Yes,
I
understand.
To sort of give me unbidden feedback that was really quite a remarkable occurrence.
All right, we'll leave it at that, and I hope all goes well. I hope that it helped. I
wish to thank everyone for their healing intentions.
Where should we be going with this? In other words, a mainstream science, of course, is going to really try and reject most of what we're talking about tonight, perhaps to a lesser and lesser degree these days, but still, by and large, you know, doctors scoff, scientists scoff. If it's not totally repeatable, it's not science. And so it is rejected. How do we bring this, or even should we bring this more into the mainstream? Is the world really ready for the knowledge of this power? That's an interesting question.
Well, we know that more than half the people in America, from the Gallup polls, more than half the people in America are having psychic experiences and reporting them. In this case, the scientists may be the last to catch on.
Yeah.
But as more and more people do research in distant healing and different kinds of healing ministrations, non-local connections that work, then I think the doctors become more and more interested.
What makes you think, though, that if you can save a life with this, doctor, that you cannot take a life with this?
Well, there's a lot of evidence for healing.
Yep.
I think that you can. Larry Dorsey has a book. This is "Be Careful What You Pray For."
Yeah, yeah.
These are your unintended consequences.
Yes, yes.
You could certainly confuse somebody that if I can close my eyes and send you a mental image, and you say, "That looks to me like an ice cream cone." I say, "That's very good, Art. I was visualizing an ice cream cone." And we know that we can have that kind of mind-to-mind connection. Similarly, I might be able to send you a picture that would confuse you or frighten you. But the evidence that I could send you something to injure you is pretty scanty.
Well, that may be, Doctor, hold on. That may be because there's not been a lot of work done in that area. Hopefully there aren't a lot of people who would do that. Doesn't mean it can't be done, though. And it seems to me a power that great can be wielded by the will of man in either direction. Just a thought, maybe not. Actually, I hope not.
Richard Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may Richard at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To Richard on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
I've got a real hot button topic for Dr. Russell Targ, and so I'm going to give him the commercial time to think about it. And so here it is. One has to wonder if this is all a function of the mind, and the mind is all a function of a great non-locality. I wonder how mind-altering drugs either do or do not affect one's abilities in this area. I know it's a real hot button, but it's kind of one that I want to put the doctor out, but put him in that frying pan and ask. He may not have an answer, but it's an obvious question, I think. All right. Back now to Dr. Targ. Doctor, pretty hot button question, but I wonder if anybody has done experiments with any sort of mind-altering drugs in this whole arena, and whether it seems to change anybody's abilities in any way, dull them or make them better or in any way affect them.
Well, you know that in the 60s, half the people in America did the experiments you're proposing.
Yes. Well, although not perhaps for the reasons we're talking about.
Well, the result tends to be that when people use mind-altering drugs, they feel very psychic, but they're not actually very psychic. Drugs can allow you to learn a lot of different things, but generally about yourself rather than about what's going on in a distant place. Remote viewing is actually an intellectual ability where you have to separate out all of the mental noise from your memory and your imagination and what's in the room and your wishes and your experiences. You got to separate out all that ongoing mental activity from the very weak psychic signal.
So then it would be your view that a mind-altering drug of some sort would just dull that ability?
It will not make, in my experience or in my readings, it doesn't make you more psychic, but it can definitely give you an insight as to who you are. I mean, Houston Smith has a wonderful book called Cleansing the Doors of Perception. Now, Houston Smith is probably one of America's preeminent writers on religious topics. He wrote a very famous book, Man and His Gods. Man and His Gods has a new title that doesn't have man in it, like something like History of World Religion. But Houston Smith has recently wrote a book called Cleansing the Doors of Perception, where he's talking about drugs as a entheogen.
Uh-huh.
That is, various kinds of drugs allow people to quiet their mind and have a experience out of space and time where they actually learn something about who they might be, what their relation to the universe, what their relationship to God is. And these often are life-changing experiences.
Yes, oh yes. Your book, the title of your book itself is intriguing, The Heart of the Mind, How to Know God Without Belief. How indeed do you know God without belief?
Well, all of the mystics talk about experience. That is how you know God without belief is by quieting the mental chatter so that you can experience something beyond your ordinary day-to-day activity.
That sounds an awful lot like what you just said about mind-altering drugs.
That's right. But there are many paths. I mean, in the 60s, there was sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yes.
All of those things will stop the ongoing chatter, along with meditation, listening to sublime music, having a spiritual teacher who will stop your mind and break your heart. There are many, many different ways. Meditation is the best known way of quieting your mind so you can experience something beyond where you normally sit. And the goal, of course, is to discover who you are, that you are, in fact, an awareness that is different than your little ego who's worrying about the things that you're fearful of, worrying about getting stuff, getting a girlfriend, making money, paying the mortgage.
April 15th.
That's April 15th.
You know, somebody told me to try something, which I have been using since, and maybe you can tell me about this. Maybe you can tell me about what I'm doing. I don't have the slightest idea, but I was told when you are stressed, when you are in a difficult situation, take a moment, close your eyes, wash yourself in white light, feel it purify you, blah, 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 you know. Go through the whole experience personally and just wash it over you, and you... And there is no question about it. It works. It actually works. You can sit there and you can cleanse yourself of this worry and this tension. And
that's good for your
stress.
Mind and for your body.
It actually, it works.
Because it'll reduce the cortisol level, which is as it is to your health. It's one of the things that you can do.
Is it a kind of self-healing?
Anything you do to stop the chatter and connect with the quiet part of your own being will be good for your health and good for your body and
but,
good for your...
But there's even an immediate... I mean, it's an immediate thing. You can do this in 30 seconds, a minute, and even less, and just sort of wash yourself over mentally with white light and push away everything that's negative, and it actually has an immediate effect. It's not like you have to wait for it and wonder. You can feel it right away. It's the daggondest thing.
A very desirable thing to learn to do, and the extent that you can learn to reside in that purified white light state. In the Vedas, they talk about residing in love. This is beyond romance, and it's hard to believe.
Oh,
but you can reside in a loving state where you feel the flow of loving awareness through you. Independent of what you're doing. This is not romantic love, but in the Christian tradition, they teach that God is love. Now, I, of course, grew up thinking that's something that Christians say just to annoy the non-believers, because nobody ever explains what God is love could be. But as you read the mystic traditions, whether it's the Buddhists, the Hindus, the Kabbalistic Jews, the Gnostic Christians, the Sufis, all of them talk about finding a way to quiet your mind or do a meditative process that allows you to experience these oceanic connections out of your body, out of time, make a connection with God or the universe or the extended consciousness. And the reward for that is that you discover that that's who you are.
Doctor.
That is, you are that flow of loving awareness.
Yeah.
It's available.
Oh, yes. Doctor, when do you think that all of this information, which sounds, you know, if somebody's just listening and turn on the last 15 minutes or something, like New Age Claptrap, when do you think that this information that you and I and a lot of my audience know is absolutely true and actual physics are going to meet? It's headed, you know, you can see the two roads headed toward an intersection somewhere down line. I wonder how far away that is.
Well, I think that's going to happen in the next decade. I think that the schism, the separation between science and spirituality is going to be eroded as people recognize that spirituality is a direct experience rather than somebody's story about belief.
Mm-hmm.
It's the idea that God is a testable hypothesis. That is, in the meditative traditions, the Buddhist traditions, they propose that if you will find a practice, some kind of quieting, and you will do that for a few weeks, we assert that you will have the following kinds of experiences. So you go and do that meditation, and then you come back as though you've just done a lab experiment with a lab report in your hand and report back what you experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about belief at all. All of the mystics do not ask you to believe a thing. So as a scientist, I can say that the separation between science and spirituality is no separation, because the spiritually minded people are in fact having an experience. They can describe that experience. Now, in Carl Sagan's book, The Demon Haunted World, he said, I have looked under every rock. I've looked at UFOs and crop circles, and I've looked at God, and I find it all incoherent. So you say, how could such a really smart man as Carl Sagan not be able to have the experience of God? And my answer is that he would never stop talking. And if you're going to have that experience, you have to actually surrender your ego, give up your story of who you think you are, and recognize that there is something outside yourself that you can experience.
You know, there's a significant amount of evidence that Carl was getting a lot closer to that toward the very end.
I believe that that's true.
Yes. Yes.
But the most important thing you can use your psychic abilities, your remote viewing experiences for, is that you must quiet your mind to do remote viewing. You've got to stop the chatter to inflow information. You've got to stop the chatter to outflow your healing intention to be a healer. And between the inflow of the remote viewer and the outflow of the healer is a quiet place, and you can learn to reside in that. And the most important thing you can discover with these abilities is discover who you are. And in my experience, who you are is that flow of loving awareness that's always available. That's who we are.
Hmm.
And you discover that you're not a body, you're just an awareness residing in a body, and that awareness is limitless. So that's not metaphysical claptrap, but our data for 25 years shows that your awareness is in fact limitless. There is no known limit to what can be experienced psychically, and that's who you are.
Oh, I'm just suggesting to you what the what a skeptic who'd been listening for about the last 15 or 20 minutes would say. They would say that, believe me.
Well, he would say, I don't believe it, and my job at the lab at Stanford Research Institute was to have the skeptical congressmen and government funding people and generals come, and they would want to see something psychic. And my job as a psychic travel agent was to show them how to get in touch with the psychic part of themselves.
And how many by percentage were you able to wow?
Almost all of them.
Really?
That's how we got our money. Those people would come and say, we'll give you some money if you show me something psychic. And I would always show them how to do it so they had their own experience to deal with rather than my story about what some psychic had done.
Well, that's pretty good batting average when you're talking about generals.
So the most amazing thing about the SRI program is that we had continuous funding for 23 years doing ESP for the government. So we couldn't have been fooling the same people for 23 years doing the same magic trick.
What it is
that we were able to show people how to contact the psychic part of themselves.
Is it not time to begin that again officially with funding, whether it would be the CIA or whoever it would be? I would think other perhaps than the CIA now would be prepared to lay down some heavy dollars for this.
Well, we think that that's going to happen. We're having a conference of all the remote viewers in Austin, having 30th anniversary of remote viewing, and it's open to the public, and people can find out about that at a website called rvconference.org.
Well, you've got a lot of listeners right now in Austin, believe me. So
this is a remote viewing conference. They just go to rvconference.org, and you can come and visit with Ingo Swann and all the other. Ingo, of course, is the father of remote viewing. Ingo is the one who taught us all how to do this, and he'll be there telling us all what we should be doing next. This is going to be a very exciting conference, June 14, 15, 16th in Austin.
You know, Doctor, I hate to ask you to even take any of his thunder, but damn, that's a good question. You know, most of my audience is pretty familiar with what remote viewing is. what it has done and where it is today? And that's an awfully good question. Where, what to do next? Where to go next? You say he'll be addressing that. What would your answer to that be?
My answer is that the most, in a certain sense, I was a psychic spy for the CIA and found God. So it was my spiritual path came from sitting in the dark for 10 years, helping people learn to do remote viewing. And what you discover is if you sit quietly for 10 years in the dark, that your awareness is really beyond your physical body. It's just obvious. It's not a belief system. It's just something you experience and can demonstrate. So I think that the most important thing that a person can do with these abilities is to discover who they are, rather than finding car keys, making money in the stock market, finding parking places is pretty important. But next to parking places, if you can discover who you are, that there is something to you beyond your physical body, that is the most important thing you can do with these abilities. The whole thread running through our book, Miracles of Mind, is how to do remote viewing, how to quiet your mind, and how to discover who in the world you might be.
And when you discover who you are, what do you know? I mean, what do you do?
Well, the first thing you discover is that you can wake up in the morning and reside in gratitude rather than in fear or resentment or judgment. I mean, I live in Silicon Valley, where a day without judgment is like a day without sunshine. But what you can learn to do is to wake up in gratitude for your health, that you live in America. But the principal thing that I'm grateful for is that I can wake up in contact with something beyond myself. That I can wake up in contact with God, that I can wake up and experience the feeling of love beyond space and time or romantic connections. So the payoff for working for the CIA is that I discovered that you can wake up in that flow of loving awareness that can't be taken away from you. I mean, Viktor Frankl discovered that in the concentration camp. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and what he evolved at Auschwitz was a psychology of optimism and spirituality. And he said, the Nazis can torture me and starve me, but they can't separate me from God.
Right.
And he wrote a book that sold 10 million copies because people are tremendously inspired by what he was able to communicate.
Huh.
So he's a great hero.
Yes, indeed, a great hero. Well, I think that there were, I guess in every war, there have been people incarcerated. Certainly in Vietnam that was true for very long periods of time, isolated for very long periods of time. Inevitably, they came back with really, really interesting stories when you pin them down about how they turned inward and how it saved them from otherwise a situation they could not have been saved from.
Yeah, the Russian writer Sharansky had a similar story. He wrote a book whose name I've forgotten where he talked about being in the Gulag for a decade and came out as a totally spiritual being and is now living in Israel. But he was treated horribly and came out sound in body and mind through what he had learned. He had been a Russian atheist, and he just learned to quiet his mind, and although his body was in a hole, his mind was in love.
Yeah.
And we have that ability. So when you say, what's the payoff for remote viewing and psychic abilities, what I think I've learned is that although you can indeed make money in the stock market using ESP, we've done that, it can be done. But I think that eventually what you discover is that no thing ever makes you happy. Happiness is who you are. And it's available.
All right, Doctor. I would like to put you on the phone with some of my listeners, which we'll do after the break, if you can hold on.
Okay.
Stand by. Dr. Russell Tarr.
Very old friend came by. about today. Cause he was telling everyone in town of the love that he just found and the reasoning of his latest fame. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, whitest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere, and the reasoning of his latest fame. Though I smiled with tears inside of her.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
In your wildest dreams, maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's all absolutely real. Maybe the dream world and the world of reality are set to collide, and the clock is ticking. I'm Art Bell. Good morning, everybody. If you have a question for my guest, Dr. Russell Targ, the original remote viewers in the CIA program, we're about to open the lines. In fact, they're open now, so let's rock. All right, once again, here is Dr. Russell Targ. Again, his book is The Heart of the Mind, How to Know God Without Belief. Also, Miracles of the Mind, Exploring Non-Local Consciousness and Spiritual Healing. And so, Doctor, if you're ready, we've got lots of people who would like to speak with you.
Happy to be with you.
All right, here we go. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Russell Targ and Art Bell. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
I'd like to bestow a title on you of Grandmaster of Nighttime Talk Radio to start with.
Thank you. Very kind.
I think you're the best.
Thank you.
I'm listening on WAAV 980 AM in Wilmington, North Carolina.
That's the way to do it. Give your local station a plug, everybody.
There you go.
All right. Anyway.
Anyway, I think you've got the best selection of songs relating to the current subject.
Thank you.
I don't know who picks them out, but
I do.
They must be psychic. You got to be psychic.
Do you have a question for my guest?
Yes, sir. I think I'm in tune with him very much a while ago when he requested, you know, a moment of meditation and everything.
Yes.
I did that, and I felt, you know, I felt something. It seemed like it left me, and it went, but that's the only way I can explain it.
I
believe, I've been listening to the entire thing, and it's, you know, everything I hear is, you know, it's all true. It's there.
Very happy to hear that.
And the meditation part is something that I'm just beginning to master a little bit, and I found that I've got the ability to block things out totally, even while I'm doing something else, and focus on one subject. And Jesus, the results are amazing.
That is, Doctor, that is the one of the benefits, isn't it? In other words, whatever task you have at hand, once you can quiet your mind, once you can become at peace with yourself, then whatever task you have at hand becomes all the easier. Single tasking becomes very easy. Your concentration level goes through the roof, right?
That's absolutely true. And the easiest way to start, before you go into meditation practice or any complicated thing, if when you wake up in the morning, instead of what you normally do, if you just wake up, open your eyes, and say thank you. If you can find a way to open your day in gratitude, it just changes your entire day. And it's shocking because we're so accustomed to worrying about all of the different things we worry about. If you just don't play that tape, just throw out that tape and open your day in gratitude, that's a very easy thing to do. You just open your eyes and remember to do that, it will just change your whole day.
You might even throw something else in, like, thank you, and, hey, can you do something about those clouds? Just kidding. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Russell Targ. Make that wild card line, I'm sorry.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Targ. Good morning.
That's Dr. Targ.
Dr. Targ.
Russell Targ. What can I do for you?
It's an honor to speak with you. It's about the future of remote viewing. It seems the reason the masses haven't embraced remote viewing is because they've really had no context to put it in. It's kind of alien. And all the new technology that we have with the Internet and with phones and computers, it seems like we're becoming more connected. And do you think remote viewing is just an evolution of our need to be connected, you know, more connected? And the future then might be like a synthesis of maybe technology and psychic ability to the point where we just sit down in a machine and plug in and we start to remote view, and it's kind of like the next step in the Internet.
Well,
I think that's a possibility.
I'm glad you mentioned that because several of your questions, I have a website where I answer several of your questions. You might like to look at the website, which is espresearch.com. And I have a paper there called The Speed of Thought that gives a kind of scientific description about how ESP works. But on the website, espresearch.com, I deal with a number of the things that you just asked me. But to answer your question, I don't think we're becoming more psychic. I think that probably in quieter times we had more of an opportunity to use our ESP. In recent times, scientists are beginning to give people permission to use the psychic ability that they've always had. So it's becoming... I think we lost it during the so-called Enlightenment, where we began to react against mysticism. That is, analysis and logic worked very well, and we began to feel less and less psychic. We've always had the ability.
But yes, but there is an interesting aspect to what he asked, Doctor, and that is the Internet. Now, the Internet is still in its infancy. However, it's beginning to resemble a gigantic neuron network, and as it continues to develop, I wonder if there is not eventually a place for the non-locality. I mean, computers eventually are going to become quantum, and all of this is going to get mixed up together at some point. Our technology and our psychic abilities are going to collide out there somewhere. I think that's where he was kind of going.
Well, certainly as we chat with each other through the night on the Internet, it makes a kind of psychic connection. The Internet, in a certain sense, brings us together. On the other hand, it's a distraction as people spend a lot of time surfing. The Internet innovator, Joe Firmich, is about to come out with a new web portal called ManyOne, which is going to have a lot of the interconnecting features that you talked about that brings groups of people together.
Uh-huh.
So ManyOne is going to be launched the end of April, and you might find that interesting to look for on the Internet.
Indeed. Indeed. But as you see, you know, if you project where the internet is going, and you project where our increasing knowledge of non-locality is going, as computers begin to get quantum on us, there's going to be a meeting out there somewhere, it seems like, and perhaps an interface. I don't know.
If I were going to spend my time, I'd put my money on consciousness rather than on the internet. I think that the personal payoff, see, our consciousness is limitless. As we can know, as Google works very, very well. It's a great source of entertainment and information, like the great encyclopedia that connects us all together.
Yeah, but it's still like a child. I mean, you know, Google will give you, if you put in a subject, it'll return, you know, 10,000 hits on something or another, for example, and 9,990 might not be the ones you want. Now, there's no limit like that with the great non-locality, but...
As we begin to hone our own consciousness...
That's right.
...then our intuition will give us those same answers instantaneously and will not give you the 99% garbage you find on the Internet. I really believe strongly that we can learn to develop our intuition and make better choices in our lives. Where intuition is a combination of all of our subconsciously stored data plus what we derive non-locally.
Yeah, but it might be interesting to see Google of the year 2100 or 2200. You know,
I'm sure that'll be an awesome event.
Maybe a different Google entirely. Listen, there are some physicists, theoretical physicists, who say the end of all physics is in sight. And I wonder what you say about that, that we're about to run into a wall.
Well, physicists have been saying that for at least 100 years. Lord Kelvin said that at the end of the 19th century. He said that physics is about all solved except for two little clouds. And those two little clouds, one turned out to be relativity theory and the other turned out to be quantum mechanics. Those clouds turned out to be pretty big.
Mm.
In recent years, Michio Kaku has been saying that we will soon have a complete understanding of all physics. It'll be described in an equation less than an inch long.
That's indeed what he says, yes.
That's a beautiful idea. But it's a silly idea, because every year, as physics is about to explain what it sees, entirely new phenomena show up. That is, in the 1980s, Stephen Hawking, a distinguished physicist, said that by the end of the century, we will explain everything we can see. 10 years later, they discovered that the universe is accelerating in its expansion. So everybody went back to the drawing board. There'll never be an end to physics because the universe is limitless. So the whole idea that there'll be an end to physics is logically incoherent. That is, Gödel's theorem says that any system always contains things that can't be proven. And in addition to that...
Why would you think, then, such brilliant minds would come to that conclusion?
Oh, it's because they've mastered a body of knowledge and are very comfortable with what they know. That is, they can answer all the questions that they can ask. They don't ask about consciousness. I was on a panel...
Oh, you're quite right about that.
I was on a panel with Michio Kaku, and he said he soon will be able to answer all questions. And I said, well, what we know is that remote viewers can look into the distance and into the future. And he said, well, consciousness isn't part of physics. And I said, but a person can affect your heart rate, can slow down your heart rate, and that'll show up on a meter. Aren't physicists concerned with meter readings and how fast their heart is going? And he said, I don't know about that data. And I believe
that's most interesting. I've asked the good doctor about, for example, the Princeton studies, and presented him with some other evidence, and that's exactly how he always answers me as well. I'm not aware of that data. I said, and this was just 2 weeks ago I had Dr. Kaku on. I said, well, you know, you're going to get some people sending you some information on all of this, and you can bet his mailbox.
The data for remote viewing, the remote viewing data is the strongest psychic data, because that went on for 25 years. Also, the distant mental influence that William Broad and Marilyn Schlitz does, where the intentions of one person affect the physiology of another person. How could a scientist not be interested in the fact that my thoughts can affect his heart rate?
Well, trust me, he has the data now, and so the next time we speak, it'll be interesting to ask how he, whether he reviewed it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Russell Targ. Hi. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Phil in Chicago.
Yes, Phil.
I wanted to ask Dr. Targ, and this is referencing The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot, and also some of the experiments that you've done on your program, Art, and I have no idea what kind of numbers of people you're dealing with, but it's got to do with large numbers of bits of consciousness, human consciousness, creating order out of randomness, and the possibility that what these numbers of people are actually doing are recreating the holograph that we call the universe and reality, and whether or not there's any validity or evidence. You know, basically what I'm talking about is like the 100th monkey concept.
Well, I don't think that the people are redistributing the chaos. I think that the holographic model is a very good analogy. I don't think the world is actually a hologram. I think it looks like a hologram because the hologram is non-local, and we live in a non-local universe. But I don't think it's actually holographic because there's no coherence to make it holographic, but it's non-local. So
What if we're all in agreement on a subconscious level that reality is going to be such and such a way, and that between media and religion and other mass consciousness affecting institutions actually keep it a certain way?
All right, let's ask this. Doctor, do you believe it would be possible for a very talented person to inject a concept into non-locality, into a mass consciousness, whatever you want to call it, to actually inject a concept?
Yeah, I think that happens on MTV all the time as a way of getting kids to buy the current brand of sugar water that's being sold. I think that television is the principal vehicle we have for injecting concepts into the society.
That is really, yeah.
In order to send somebody a signal through their psyche, a person has to be have an open mind, that is, be receptive. And I think that our society is so noisy that people tend not to have that receptivity.
Okay, and I certainly agree with you with regard to television, even radio, what we're doing here. We're injecting, but I guess I meant as a remote viewer might pluck information from a non-locality, could information that might be received at some less than fully conscious level be injected?
Well, the data is much stronger for inflowing information.
I'm sure it is.
For putting out information.
But is it...
It's possible. I mean, to the extent that I can visualize something here in front of me, and we've done this experiment, I can visualize something and you will then tell me what it is.
Uh-huh.
There is no doubt that I can put out a signal and you can pick it up. Now, of course, you're able to do that because there's only one of us here and there's no separation between us. So the model that I am broadcasting a psychic signal from here to your studio, that's not a good model because we know that the distance doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly I can conjure up a picture and you can describe that picture. That's like injecting it into the society. But you really have to be open and searching for that. It's not likely that I'm going to be able to cause you to do something
that I would not otherwise have done. All right, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. I have a question about the number of minds, whether it really matters or not.
I've been where the eagle flies, rode his wings across autumn skies, kissed the sun, touched the moon, but he left me much too soon. His ladybird, he left his ladybird.
Ladybird, come on down, I'm here waiting on the ground. Ladybird, I'll treat you good.
I'm in the way down on Baker Street, light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day, drifting out away. So cold, it's got so many people, but it's got no soul, and it's taking you so long to find out you were wrong when you thought it held everything. You used to think that it was so easy, you used to say that it was so easy, but you're trying
Richard Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It is indeed. My guest is Dr. Russell Targ. He's a remote viewer. He was in the CIA remote viewing program for many years. And if you have questions for him, we're going to lay heavily into the phones in this final segment. Stay right where you are. Back now to Dr. Russell Targ. Dr. Targ, Joe in Cheney, Washington asks probably the impossible, but asks, Doctor, please define time. How do you measure time? What is the matrix of time? Is there any way you can explain what you believe time is in a way that people can understand?
Well, time in physics is the distance between two events that happen at the same place. So that if you have 42nd Street and Broadway and you look at it and then you look at it again, the distance between those two looks is said to be the time between them. So there really is no device that measures time. There's no paddle wheel you can put into the river of time and watch it spin. That would be very nice.
It would, wouldn't it?
What our wristwatch does is simply record it counts up the ticks you have and measures the number of ticks that occur. We call the number of ticks that occur that are equally spaced out. We call that a measurement of time. But all of the measurements of time we have are simply sequences that occur periodically.
Is it probable that there was, as we understand it, no such thing as time prior to the Big Bang?
I think that nobody knows about that. That is, our time...
In other words, when there were no objects, if there was ever such...
When there was no space, there was no time.
Yeah, exactly. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Russell Targ. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, I'm here. Hi. First, I'd just like to say thanks for having me on. I'm calling from Nashville.
Yes, sir.
Channel 1510. Okay. First time caller, so I'm a little nervous.
That's all right. That's WLAC in Nashville.
All right. First, I gotta say this is incredible. I just had this weird little psychic quirk just happened to me just now. At the beginning of the program, when you started taking calls, I'd call in and call in and call in and couldn't answer, you know, didn't get any answer or anything. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I just had this idea to call. And I did, and I got through to you. Amazing. So, my question for the doctor is, earlier you mentioned, you said something to the effect of when physics would meet, would meet with spirituality. I was wondering if anybody had really taken a look at chakras and investigated how the different glands in our bodies react to the different glands in other people, sending out different electromagnetic signals, and how that could really be related to psychic phenomena.
Well, since the effect that one person has on another is independent of the space and time between them, we don't think it's electromagnetic. Physics knows a certain number of things really well. ESP is not one, but electromagnetic is one. As we really understand how electromagnetic falls off as they travel through space and time. So that if you're doing an experiment where one person is looking at another person's video image, you can affect that person at a distance independent of that distance.
And apparently time. So we
think that it's not an electromagnetic signal.
Because electromagnetic would at best go at the speed of light, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, that makes sense.
The non-local model says that the consciousness of the two people are connected to each other.
But ultimately, then, could there not be, when science meets up with a metaphysics, couldn't there suddenly be innovations that would just boggle the mind, like instantaneous travel? I mean, one can imagine all sorts of things when we begin to understand the realm.
Well, I think that right now there should be no quarrel between science and spirituality. I think that people will finally catch on that spirituality deals with an experience just like science.
Well, I don't know about quarrel, but there's egos, you know.
That's right. That is, physicists are the worst, because physicists feel that they have a complete understanding of everything that there is.
Oh, yes.
So they just exclude what they don't understand.
Okay. Wild card line, you're on the air with Dr. Targ. Hi.
Hi. Dr. Targ, in your remote viewing experiences, both inside and outside SRI, have you ever remote viewed aliens? And the reason why I bring this up is because in the past, some of the guests from SRI and other remote viewers that maybe were not connected with it, when the question comes up, it's usually answered very vaguely. So my question is, have you remote viewed aliens?
Or we might ask, have you remote viewed even the existence of a non-human entities?
Well, I will not be vague, and I will tell you, in my extensive remote viewing, I have had no contact with aliens. Ingo Swann, on the other hand, wrote a whole book about his remote viewing of alien creatures and bases on the moon. Ingo wrote a book called Penetrations, which he describes all sorts of alien activities. That's his experience, and he's a prodigious remote viewer.
He certainly is.
But I have not encountered any aliens in my portion of the remote view, inside or outside SRI.
Have you made any attempts? I mean, that's an important question, because remote viewing is a specific thing. I mean, you have to go looking, basically, for targets, right?
See, it's very hard to separate your memory, your experience, from your imagination. For example, I could tell you that I once quieted my mind and visited a alien saucer, and I had an experience. But there's no way to tell whether I'm seeing a science fiction movie or I was actually on a spacecraft. So what my internal state report is regarding visiting an alien spacecraft
doesn't have any merit. That is, there's no reason you should believe me because I wasn't able to verify what my experience was.
Did you in fact have that experience?
Yes.
And well, that's another way to answer the caller's question then. That's interesting.
And Pat Price said, oh, yes, you visited the body storage area. You should be very careful because they will catch you and keep you there. But that's just a story. But I have no reason to believe that it corresponds to any kind of external reality except that the distinguished Pat Price said, oh, yes, I've been there, and you should be careful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very interesting. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Russell Targ. Hi.
Hi, Art, Dr. Targ. It's a pleasure to speak to you tonight. It's Steve from the Virgin Islands, Art. How you doing?
All the way to the Virgin Islands. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm the guy who kept calling, pleading with you to do some more mind experiments, so I'm overjoyed that we actually did another one tonight.
And I would imagine you're rather interested in the observed effect, immediate.
Absolutely.
Effect, yeah. Okay.
Two questions, though, Dr. Targ. I'm wondering, have you done any research relating to either getting back to what you were talking about intuition before, about any somatic or psychological manifestations of not following one's intuition? The reason I ask is because I've done a lot of writing for my graduate program here on trying to make a case to my school that a lot of what people interpret as anxiety and depression may actually be what you're talking about relating to the way their mind interacts with their consciousness and not following intuition. Have you ever...
a whole discipline in a whole part of ESP research called psi missing. And in psi missing, you use your ESP to determine what the right answer is and then do something different. So there are people who are very skeptical about ESP, but have psychic abilities nonetheless. So when you give a devoted skeptic an ESP test, he will use his ESP to determine what's right and then choose something different. So he winds up with a significant result, but it's significantly fewer than you would expect.
Well, then, do you think that a lot of people who actually experience anxiety are actually at some subtle level picking up on or not properly manifesting what you're talking about? It's actually their intuition speaking to them at a level that can only come out and be manifested somatically through their body?
Well, I think that if a person is having psychic impressions because they are open to being in touch with psychic abilities, but are then repressing them because their conscious mind doesn't want to have those abilities, which is probably most people, that could certainly be a source of anxiety. That is to say, if your subconscious is giving you information derived psychically, but because the society doesn't give you a place to put them, then that's a crazy-making experience.
Right. That's exactly what I'm talking about, because what the research I've done and with some of the clients I work with, and I work mainly with adolescents and kids, is a lot of what they experience as fear and worry and doubt is actually being impressed on them by adults to not listen to what you're talking about, not to listen to that side of them that is actually expressing itself through these manifestations in their body in the form of anxiety.
Yeah, all that almost begins as soon as we can talk.
Now, the big advance in mental health is with the publish of the DSM-4, that's a diagnostic and statistical manual. Just because you're having psychic experiences is no longer evidence of mental illness. It's a big advance in the recent DSM manual. It used to be, in the DSM-3, if you told your doctor that you sometimes can read people's minds, that's good enough to get you put away for a 72-hour hold.
Mm-hmm.
But right now you have to manifest some other weird behavior other than just occasional telepathy.
Isn't that interesting? That's a big advance. Big change.
It's an important change. It means that modern psychiatry recognizes that people may have psychic experiences and it's not necessarily an indication that you're crazy.
Hmm.
Is that good news?
It is good news, but it also suggests, for example, that some percentage, you might want to put a number on it, I wouldn't, of people who are locked up in mental hospitals really ought not be there.
I would guess that that's probably true. In this society, if you are a profoundly psychic person and you live in a society that says you shouldn't be doing that because it doesn't exist,
uh-huh.
That's enough to drive you crazy.
Yeah, or at least have you declared so. West of the Rockies, you are on the air with Dr. Targ. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is John from Portland.
Yes, sir.
Recently we've had a couple of girls, Miranda Gaddis and Ashley Pond. They've been kidnapped from Oregon City.
Yes.
And I was wondering about remote viewing, how that helps in finding people that have been kidnapped or missing children, what the success rate would be.
Well, Gerald Quazet, the famous Dutch psychic, was extremely good at finding missing children. He's world famous and worked with the police.
But again, we were talking about Osama bin Laden earlier. In other words, you might be able to locate the child, but all you might find out is, well, the child's in a room and the room looks like this. And
is there any way to, say, determine what happened to them?
A psychic can often tell you what happens to them. I've done some of that.
But
a psychic can often describe what happened to a missing person. If you want to locate where somebody is, it's good to have several psychics working on the geography. A team of psychics very often can locate a hidden thing or a hidden person. One psychic can usually tell you the condition or what happened to the person.
But it's not so much a job for a remote viewer.
Okay. Could we ask that people pray for these girls then and to be returned on your show?
You can always ask for that, sir. Yes, indeed. Thank you. Yes, you can always ask for that. I don't know. I think
regarding bin Laden that...
There's not a lot of difference, doctor. I mean, but you said it yourself. Bin Laden, you might describe a cave he's in. Well, with a missing child, you might describe a room they're in, perhaps.
A team of people can often work with a map, however, and through a combination of dowsing and remote viewing and intuition, mark the map and find out where it is.
But the remote viewers in such a search for an individual would only be a portion of the solution. You would need really psychics, wouldn't you?
That's right. You need to bring in many different... Remote viewing is a subset of psychic ability where you describe what's on your mental screen.
Mm-hmm.
There are many other things you can bring to bear.
Otherwise, prayer. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Targ. Hello.
You talking to me?
East of the Rockies, call toll free 1-800-825-5033.
No, I just had to... Hold it. We're not allowed to give out last names on the air, so I had to bleep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had to bleep that out. So give us your first name only.
Okay, my name's Bud.
Okay, and you're in Michigan.
Battle Creek, Michigan.
Okay.
Radio station's WBCK, I guess, 930.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't listen to your show very much. Just started recently here in the last, week and a half, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe a little longer. I've been listening to stuff you guys talk to on there and everything, and, I gotta say, I'm over 50, and I've listened to about the shadow people. I've listened about.
Sir, we've got very limited amount of time here.
The voices of the ghosts and all that.
Right.
I've never witnessed any of this stuff. I mean, what do you got to say for how come some people don't see none of that stuff, huh?
Well, actually, in a way, that's a good question. How come some people are psychically numb? Might be a good question.
I think people who grow up in a community where having psychic abilities is discouraged or a sign of craziness will not develop their psychic abilities.
That's right.
If you want to see something psychic, the easiest thing to do is to look at one of my books where we actually show you how to do it. The Miracles of Mind has now been read by tens of thousands of people
and they write to me and say, you know, that really works.
Yeah, we've got links on the website to your books at Amazon, of course. You know, if little Johnny has an invisible playmate, or starts talking about something that doesn't seem to make sense to us, we discourage little Johnny. We say, don't make things up, Johnny. That's not real. We just begin drilling this out of them at a very early age. When I say them, I mean almost all young people, right?
But the good news is you can develop the ability, because I've done successful remote viewing with Army generals, cabinet officials, government scientists. We've had very, very good success at SRI.
I know, but the numbness is a learned thing, right?
That's right. But you can unlearn it.
You can unlearn it.
With the demand of a remote viewing teacher, and if you wish to unlearn it, if you wish to get in touch with a part of yourself that's psychic, then you can do it.
Then you can do it. Your books are available mainly on Amazon.com. Bookstores around America?
Amazon's a good place to do it.
Amazon is a good place to do it. They give steep, impossible discounts.
Yep.
It make me wonder how they're going to stay in business. It has been a pleasure to have you on the air tonight, Doctor.
I'm always very happy to talk with you.
And I wish you and very especially Elizabeth all the very best, and I hope it all helped, and I hope people will continue to send the white light. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, tonight, you all had another piece of proof. I really didn't expect to be presenting it to you tonight, but I found out about Elizabeth just shortly before airtime. It was nothing the doctor suggested to me, I can assure you. I received a phone call from another individual. And so what happened tonight was spontaneous, and the report we got back from the doctor was amazing, but it didn't actually amaze me, because I know it's true. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.